Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Tim Ellis. Bad news for dip netters headed to Chitna. The State Department of Fish and Game has announced it'll close the Chitna personal use dip net fishery at 12:01 a.m. Monday, just past midnight Sunday, 10 days after the season opened, 3.5 months before it was scheduled to end. The emergency order says the closure is required because of an exceptionally low run of red salmon in the Copper River. Department officials say in a news release issued Wednesday that the 2018 sockeye run up the Copper is about a third lower than projected. They say the count at the Miles Lake sonar site was the eighth lowest for this date since 1978. The officials say they'll continue to monitor the run and that if the count increases enough to meet the escapement goal, they may reopen the fishery. Investigators say two small airplanes collided in mid-air around noon Wednesday in an area just west of Anchorage. One pilot was killed when he lost control of his plane after the collision, and it crashed near the mouth of the Big Susitna River. The other managed to limp back to the Lake Hood seaplane base in Anchorage, where he made an emergency landing. Alaska State Troopers identified the deceased pilot as 56-year-old James Pullman of Wasilla. The trooper report said the pilot who made the emergency landing was in good condition, but it did not identify the pilot. Clint Johnson, the head of the National Transportation Safety Board's Alaska region, says the pilot who landed the damaged Cessna 175 reported the planes were flying directly at each other.
He suddenly saw an airplane that was basically spinner to spinner, nose to nose. He made an evasive maneuver by pulling back on the yoke, which obviously the airplane climbed very quickly. There was a collision. Don't know where the other airplane was struck, but struck his nose gear and left landing gear, sheared both of those off in the collision. Then the second airplane descended uncontrollably into the waters of the mouth of the Big Sioux.
Johnson says the NTSB believes the person who died was the pilot and sole occupant of the aircraft, but it remained unclear Wednesday if there were any passengers. A search around the crash site continued into the evening. Pogo Mine officials say the company may extend the life of the mine northeast of Delta Junction if exploration they're conducting this summer confirms the presence of potentially rich gold deposits.
What we're doing this summer is quite a bit of exploration. We are dedicating about $21 million to exploration and definition drilling, which will really just help us determine where the rest of the gold is. How do we get to it? How much is there?
Pogo spokeswoman Wendy McNaughton says it was the discovery of additional gold reserves around the Fort Knox mine north of Fairbanks that prompted Kinross Gold Corporation officials to announce Tuesday they've extended the life of that mine through the coming decade.
They did their exploration and they found very favorable results earlier in the spring, and so they have since translated that to extend their life of mine to 2030.
McNaughton says officials with Sumitomo Metal Mining Pogo already have extended the life of the Pogo mine since it began operation in 2006 because additional gold reserves were discovered. It's since been extended to 2021, and McNaughton says that could change depending on what this summer's exploration reveals.
So we're hoping towards the end of the summer we'll have a pretty good idea of how much gold we can access.
The Pogo mine employs about 320 people and does business with more than 100 contractors. It's well established that Arctic sea ice is changing dramatically. Ice coverage has decreased as the climate has warmed, and the amount of older, multi-year ice has gone down significantly. Residents of many Alaskan communities are seeing the ice come in later and leave sooner. Ravenna Koenig of Alaska's Energy Desk recently took a trip onto the sea ice off Utqiagvik and has this report on what some of those changes look like up close.
On an early evening in late May, about a dozen grad students and postdocs are standing at the northern edge of Utqiagvik, bundled up and waiting by a fleet of snow machines for one man to rumble their way.
Which way is Barrow?
Were you thinking of that line the whole way here?
This is Dr. Craig George.
Craig George has been a wildlife biologist with the North Slope Borough since the early 1980s. He spent literal months of his life on the ice in this part of Alaska, often camped out for days or weeks at a time, doing bowhead whale counts and helping to measure and sample whales during spring whaling. The other voice belongs to Andy Mahoney, an ice researcher at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He's been coming to Utqiagvik for the past 18 years to study sea ice.
Craig was there at the very beginning of my sea ice career, and I think...
During the Pleistocene.
Back in the Pleistocene, yeah. Back when ice used to be ice.
Yeah,
before this new ice that we've got now.
George and Mahoney are leading a group of science students on a snow machine trip out onto the Chukchi Sea. We whip over snow-covered lagoons, down the slope leading to the ocean, and over several miles of relatively flat ice close to shore. Then the surface gets rougher. We start to see big piles of broken ice. These are pressure ridges. They're created when big chunks of floating ice bump up against the shore-fast ice we're snow machining on, forcing it to crumble and push both up above the surface, which we can see, and down below it, which we can't. I asked Craig George how what we're looking at is different from what he saw out here decades ago.
The ice tells you what it's made out of when it formed. I mean, the ridges, see the thickness. So that's relatively thin first year. I haven't seen any multi-year.
Multi-year ice is ice that survived at least one summer. It's usually several feet thicker than the ice that forms and melts away in a single year.
First and second year ice looks like the Rockies, Rocky Mountains, and the old multi-year ice looks like the Appalachians, sort of rounded.
A few decades ago, 61% of the ice on the Arctic Ocean was multi-year ice. Now, it's about half that. One reason that multi-year ice matters is that it's one of the ways the Arctic stays cold. Ice reflects heat from the sun, while water traps it. So if a ton of ice stops being ice during the summer and instead becomes water, the Arctic is going to get warmer, which means it won't be able to help keep the rest of the Earth cool. We clamber up a 20-foot pressure ridge. Before us is a seemingly endless field of ice rubble, sharp blue shards jutting up in every direction. No rounded Appalachians here. The lack of multi-year ice doesn't just mean that certain shapes are jagged when they used to be round. Andy Mahoney says it helps explain why the landscape looks different in other ways.
These ridges that we're standing on, there would have been more of them and they would have been bigger. So it really has changed. I mean, you look back at some pictures of that era and the features that we now see, they're sort of something of a shadow from the past.
There are other changes too. The ice here is forming later, and in some places this year was record thin. But that doesn't necessarily translate to a bad ice year for people who depend on the ice, like hunters. Yes, it means the window of time to hunt certain animals is shorter. But when it comes to the ice conditions that make for a good whaling year, wind, currents, and weather play a huge role too.
Weather plays a big factor in our hunt, and this year the weather was pretty windy.
That's Joseph Levitt, a whaling captain.
Pretty windy, but we had our ice stayed solid. There was hardly any current on the ocean. And so it turned out to be a good year. At least we got 8 whales.
Billy Adams is a whaler who works for the North Slope Borough Wildlife Department. He says that, yes, ice is freezing later. And yes, parts are thinner. But even as they see changes in the ice, whalers are adapting.
We just make changes to how we're going to hunt and when we're going to hunt. That's the biggest thing.
Even as the ice continues to change, whalers say they will keep finding ways to bring whales home to the community. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik.
And I'm Tim Ellis.